Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, we break down the latest projections on the fiscal outlook for the state, plus the future of rail expansion in Wisconsin, how a new passenger rail route could play a pivotal role in landing additional projects, and will recall organizers have enough signatures to try and remove the longest-serving assembly speaker in the state? All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for May 24th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This week, we're going to begin looking at maybe a deep dive into some fiscal numbers about the health of the state's finances. So new projections came out from the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, about state tax collections, income, sales tax collections. So if you're looking at this on your screen, state tax collections are up almost 1%. Income sales tax collections are up. And what is down is corporate collections. Now, the big headline here is what the state will look like at the end of 2023-2025 state budget. And they'll have about a $3.1 billion surplus. And that always is telling, too, because this is what lawmakers could essentially be working with when crafting the next state budget.
So this is a kind of taking a temperature of where things are at. So two things going on here. One, from the Department of Revenue got collections on taxes. Now, LFB had projected growth of 0.4% this fiscal year compared to last year. We're at 0.9. Always better to be ahead than behind. April's a huge month for tax collections because of the individual income tax returns that were due April 15th. The next big thing is in early January, the Fiscal Bureau will do another take looking at where things are at and give lawmakers the foundation for the budget. The governor will use that to build his budget. Lawmakers use that as the foundation for how they go through it. Tell us where we're at fiscally. That'll take into account revenue growth for the rest of this year, plus looking ahead to 25-27, which seems a long ways away, I know. Two, we had Fiscal Bureau do another look at the general fund budget. Basically, what's all happened this session? Every bill that was passed, everything that was done, where we're at. With that, shaved a little bit off the top for the surplus, not too big of a deal, still more than $3 billion. Then go back to that LFB report. They also looked ahead to 25-27. Right now, we have enough money with what we have to cover all spending commitments in the next 2 years and have $2 billion left over. The caveat is that's without doing anything with caseload increases, inflation numbers, all that kind of stuff that'll be figured out next year. Also worth noting, the rainy day fund is going to have $2 billion, that's $2 billion with a B, at the end of this fiscal year, June 30th, 2025. We're at $1.8 billion right now. We as a state make $8 million a month on interest on that fund. So that's a big pot of money that is going to be touched most likely anytime soon, but tells you we're in pretty good shape. The question is, where does Governor Evers and the new legislature end up with this budget? So maps different. Results should be different. This fall, we should have a different looking legislature, composition-wise at least. So with that different legislature, will we have a different looking budget, or will it still be as a conservative one that Republicans send to Evers that he then tries to work with his partial veto authority?
Of course, many other headlines that come out of just the figures. Now we're going to move on to more legislative retirements that are happening in the state legislature. And two significant ones that we want to point out are two Republicans. That's Representative Ty Bowden and Representative Warren Petrick. He's from the town of Washington. And why we're talking about this is because, like I said, there's been a string of retirements that have been coming. Of course, a lot of it has to do with the new maps that have been implemented. But there's also the filing for, if you're not going to run, is due this Friday, too. So something to keep an eye out for.
Yes. So far, 22 retirements in the Assembly, 3 in the Senate, either leaving, or running for something else. We're still behind where we were 2 years ago. It's not anything really out of the ordinary. What's significant about these two is with Ty, he was drawn into a seat with Ron Tussler. Tussler had surgery about 3 weeks ago, had a cancerous tumor removed that was about the size of a baseball. He's been recovering. He had been kind of trying to see how things went before he announces what he's going to do. He told me this week he's going to run for re-election. Ty, who's been friends with Ron for about a decade, had told him one time, I'll never run against you. So once Ron said, I'm good to go, Ty said, I won't run again. Ron's about a decade older than Ty is, and Ty is like, look, I've got my opportunities. I can run for stuff locally. I'll stay engaged, but not going to run. Warren is interesting because we've talked before about Robin Voss, Assembly Speaker, and the need for 55, 54. Warren was drawn into a district that's about 56% Democratic, depending on which numbers you use. The thought was he's the one guy who could hold that seat. He's a prolific fundraiser, longtime lawmaker, been there for a decade, well-known, 14 years actually, well-known, good campaigner. He'd give him a shot. Without him, it's much harder to hold. Now, next I'm looking at is Jesse Rodriguez over in South Milwaukee, Oak Creek, that area. She hasn't announced what she's going to do yet. Same situation. Longtime Republican lawmaker in a district that's about 55-plus Democratic. How she might be the best bet they have to hold that seat. If she doesn't, hard to hold it. Well, those seats are what you need if you're Robin Voss to get to that mid-50s number. That's important. We talked before about the troublemakers, the rabble-rousers, the people who don't play the team game. If you're at 53, it's a tough caucus to manage. Now, there's a chance for Democrats to win the majority this fall. We're still a ways away, but as we look at the polls right now, if Joe Biden and Donald Trump are neck and neck or Trump's ahead by a point or two, it's really difficult to see how Democrats win the majority of the Assembly this fall. They need a plus three, plus four environment, top of the ticket, to give them that path, because there are enough Republican-leaning seats that if they just probably just win the Republican-leaning ones, they should be at 50. Again, so you need that kind of top-of-the-ticket performance to help provide a path for you as a Democrat to win the majority.
And, you know, I've also seen a lot of polls recently, too, some in the state, but also national, looking at the U.S. Senate race. I always think there's an interesting factor there where can Tammy Baldwin be that pull to the polls if people are still not really excited about President Biden? Because we can also remember, you know, it wasn't too long ago in the 2022 midterms that Democrats almost swept a lot of statewide races before this magic, a state treasurer, John Lieberman, won and was the only Republican. So there's a lot of factors that could happen, but whether Tammy Baldwin is that person remains to be seen, because she's kind of up in some polls, but the statewide ones almost neck and neck with her opponent, Eric Hovde. So we'll see where that goes with that.
Especially with the point you bring up with the five-person race. So we talk about head-to-head, Trump, Biden, they're always within a point or two, it seems like. But you get to that five-person race, they're in the low 40s. So if you're either Eric Hovde or Tammy Baldwin, you have to run 8-9 points ahead of the top of your ticket to win the race this fall. That could be where the coattails come from, a Tammy Baldwin or maybe an Eric Hovde even, to help those down-ballot races.
All right. Let's move on to the next topic, which is rail expansion here in Wisconsin. We're going to be talking about the significance of a new project that kicked off this week. So state and local officials on Tuesday celebrated the launch of the Borealis passenger rail expansion that will connect three major cities. We're talking about Chicago, Milwaukee, and St. Paul, Minnesota. Now, this project marks the first major expansion of passenger train services in Wisconsin in over two decades. It's actually 22 years to be exact. Now, officials at the Wisconsin Department of Transportation said the new service will play a pivotal role in selling future rail expansion projects. What we're talking about there is there's a study going on right now that could possibly connect passengers in Madison, Eau Claire, St. Paul, Green Bay, more of the Fox cities. And this is something that, of course, was talked about way back when Governor Scott Walker was in office. Let's first just hear from DOT officials when we asked questions at this press conference about, well, what about that future project? What if you don't get enough federal funds? Do state lawmakers have to have a say in this? So let's take a listen to what they had to say.
We do have other grant opportunities that we're pursuing to do the work needed to assess what we can do between here and Madison, what we can do between here and Green Bay and Eau Claire. So we know we've got the NFL draft coming next year. We are looking at new opportunities, but yeah, we're assessing the need and what work is needed, and we have some grant funds to do that readiness study right now. We want to get the data. We want to hear from customers that this is something that they want and they can support going forward. Then we'll have additional data and information to share with state lawmakers.
So while I know sometimes it'd be nice to hop on a train to get to Milwaukee, the reality is that, yes, there are federal funds available, but right now GOP leaders, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemieux, have said that they're opposed to using state funding if it's necessary to, you know, expand rail, especially to Madison and Milwaukee. And their argument is primarily due to they don't want to be subsidizing this project for the next 30, 40, 50 years and paying for repairs, because who it might fall on is state funding going forward. So what's happening right now, though, is that there's $2.5 million that the state received from the bipartisan infrastructure law that is studying the possibility of this rail expansion. And while the project is, of course, relying heavily on federal funds, likely going to have some buy-in from lawmakers if this happens.
If Republicans stay in charge, it's not going to happen, most likely. We had this fight 14 years ago. Mm-hmm. They had no interest in a high-speed rail line between Madison and Milwaukee. That was supposed to be the spur to go from Milwaukee to Madison into the Twin Cities. That didn't materialize, and they haven't changed their stance or thought about subsidizing another transportation system, especially when, in their argument, you can drive from Milwaukee to Madison half the time faster than the train can get there.
Very true. So what we'll learn sometime this summer of what Madison officials is they've picked eight possible locations for an Amtrak location, and they're going to be narrowing that down and releasing that sometime this summer. So that might just get some more chatter about this issue. But whether or not they can sell this Amtrak state officials to state lawmakers remains to be seen. All right, let's move on to the next topic, which is the Voss recall deadline, which is approaching on Tuesday. And ahead of the Tuesday deadline, we had some officials on Monday in Racine basically saying that, hey, we think we got enough signatures to do this. And this is, of course, the second recall attempt against Speaker Voss, who is the longest-serving Assembly Speaker in Wisconsin history.
So numerous strains here. One, they said they have enough, they're on track for signatures in the 63rd Assembly District. That's key because, remember, Voss is elected 63rd in 2022. He's now in the 33rd Assembly District. So we don't know for sure if that's where they should recall him from. Remember, the Elections Commission, about a month ago or so, when it was asked to weigh in on the first petitions, found they were insufficient. Gableman, former Supreme Court Justice, said, which district should we be using? And the commission declined to answer that question. The Supreme Court was asked, which map should be used for any recalls or special elections? Declined to say. So if they turn in signatures for the 63rd Assembly District, there will be a possible legal challenge from Robin Voss, saying that's not the right seat to recall me from. So that's question number one. Two, do they have enough? So they turned in more than enough numerically last time, but they were a mess in terms of fraudulent signatures, which district they were in, all those kinds of problems. They say they've cleaned that up. We shall see. The next thing is the timeline. So rough timeline, all right, because there are all kinds of variables here. But they turn in on Tuesday. Then you begin this series of deadlines for Robin Voss to file a response, the petitioners to file a response to that response, then Voss to file a rebuttal. I know, it gets crazy, doesn't it? Then you have June 27th. That's the next Elections Commission meeting. They will then weigh in, likely that day or by the next day, if these are sufficient. If they're sufficient, then the clock begins on when the election would be. You go six Tuesdays out. That's when the election would be, unless there's a primary. There's a primary, that becomes a day, and the election is 4 weeks out. That primary would be August, the first Tuesday in August. A week later is the August primary for the fall election. So what I'm trying to get across here is there are all these things that could happen in a very short order in this recall that would then be butting up against the regular fall election. It's a question I've gotten from numerous people about this. Why not just challenge Robin Voss in the August primary?
I was just going to bring that up.
It'd be so much easier. Now, the recall petitioners keep saying they want Voss gone. They can't wait for him to be, they can't risk him being there anymore because he's an impediment to election integrity. Nothing is going to happen between now and November with the legislature that would change anything that's going to happen. I mean, even if he's gone, it doesn't change our dynamic of Megan Wolf is the Election Commission Administrator. There's a lawsuit in Dane County Court that has held up anything else. Republicans have left for the year. They're not coming back to do an impeachment resolution on her right now. I don't see that changing from my conversations just because Voss might be recalled. Nothing's going to change. But they are adamant it has to happen now. The other thing is, if they recall him, he can still run again for the fall election. So there are all these things that kind of like make it a little interesting. Also, by the way, Robin Voss hasn't updated his registration yet to run again for the fall.
Yep.
So sorry to steal your thunder.
No, it's okay. I'm like, I'm good there.
He's got his list of things going on.
Right.
So watching that. He said he's going to run. But just kind of interesting, he hasn't really updated it yet.
And we haven't really heard from him. I mean, we've heard from him basically in the past saying this is ridiculous effort, but he's kind of staying quiet right now. It's like you said, they're not coming back. You know, he's not really going to probably weigh in maybe on Tuesday when the signatures are filed. But what I was kind of waiting for is, of course, who spoke first at this press conference was a former Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman, who was in charge of the election review that Voss tapped to lead it. Mm-hmm. But of course, it didn't turn out any results, any significant results, that would prove that there was widespread fraud in the election. Now, of course, Voss is pretty upset that he hired him in the first place, and they both kind of nitpick each other back and forth. But that was something I was waiting for, but I think Voss is just waiting to see how this plays out, because the big question is, they say they have enough. They said they had enough last time. A lot of messy signatures. You know, there was allegations that there was a fraud, that people didn't sign these signatures. So just something to keep an eye on when they start going through these on Tuesday.
And one last deadline to mention, June 3rd is the filing deadline for the fall election. So we should know the candidates in every race by a week from Monday.
All right. Okay, let's move on to campus protests and kind of the latest fallout that has happened with this. And we're specifically going to be talking about the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee because the chancellor, Mark Mone, issued an apology on Tuesday after Jewish groups and the UW system president, Jay Rothman, condemned the deal that he struck with pro-Palestinian protesters to end the encampment on campus. Now, last week, the Milwaukee Jewish Federation and the Anti-Defamation League of the Midwest called Mone's agreement with protesters, quote, offensive and dangerous, after the group said he refused to meet with Jewish students and he didn't address anti-Semitic incidents that were happening on campus. So this is still something that continues to have more fallout in the Milwaukee area.
And two Jewish groups this week put out a statement in response, his apology, saying basically it wasn't good enough. They took issue with not, in their words, not really acknowledging like what prompted all this, the October 7th invasion. So what I'm watching for is with the Board of Regents, there have been critics who say Mone has had a series of shortcomings with his management. Will the regents get together and say enough is enough and have take some action about him being the chancellor? So I'm watching for one of those personnel meetings the regents sometimes notice, if that has anything bearing about his job security or what is going to happen, what happened with him going forward.
Right, and like you mentioned, it was Tuesday he issued the apology, and just yesterday on Thursday, there was Jewish organizations that were like, hey, this apology is an improvement. Meanwhile, the pro-Palestinian protesters were like, wait, why are you apologizing? We liked your agreement. So it's just a little tit-for-tat going on as well. This also kind of leads into another conversation I want to have, JR, about RNC security concerns, because we've heard from a lot of protest groups that they're going to be there. We don't know exactly their protest location right now, but there is a possibility of it being in Marquette Park, Pier Marquette Park in Milwaukee, which is a little bit about a block and a half, I would say, walk from where Pfizer is going to be and where most delegates are going to be. And this has been an ongoing fight. We heard from U.S. Senator Ron Johnson for several weeks. He's trying to meet with Social Security, so basically include that park in, you know, the security zone to push protesters farther away. And then we've also heard from the RNC this week also is accusing the Secret Service of not listening to their concerns. This is just going to be something that's going to come to a head at some point. But, you know, the statements that I've gotten from Secret Service is that, you know, we're not likely going to make any changes. We, you know, this is thoroughly vetted. You know, we do a lot of security checks to figure out where this perimeter is going to be. But I think in the end, I don't think Republicans nor protesters are going to be happy with the end result.
And there's this kind of push you have to allow protesters so far from the Arena Hall, I believe. There are First Amendment issues here. But obviously, Republicans and Democrats, too, want as few problems as possible. We in the media, when things get kind of hectic with the protests, we tend to cover those things. That's not the image you want being shot to TV homes across the country. You want the folks to be on the message from the podium in the hall, not the protests outside the hall. Democrats have the same concerns in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Especially with this conflict in Gaza, worries about protesters upending Joe Biden. There's softness in his poll numbers, especially a place like Michigan, where before we've talked about how Wisconsin's like this tipping point for Biden. I'm seeing more and more polls where Michigan is a bigger problem for Biden than Wisconsin is because possibly of the Muslim population. They're unhappy with his stance toward Gaza. So again, protests are First Amendment, covered by the First Amendment. They're great in that regard. Not great image-wise for the conventions when they want to put forth their message, not that message.
All right. Let's move on to the next topic, which happened this morning, not too long ago, is that a new DOC secretary was appointed by Governor Tony Evers. And who we're talking about is Jared Hoy. He was the deputy secretary before. He's been serving there till about 2007. And this position has not been left vacant, but he was kind of serving as the interim for a while. He also not too long ago testified to lawmakers about some possible, you know, protocols that have happening under Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake. Of course, we know they've been the troubled youth prisons for a very long time. It seemed after that committee hearing not too long ago, I heard some conversations Republicans were having with Jared Hoy, and they were pretty impressed with him. They were like, hey, I think you should take this job. And, well, it looks like Evers tapped him anyways.
We've reached the point in the governor's term where we're at almost a six-year mark, and that's a lot of times when you find you have vacancies for cabinet positions, and you dip into the agency staff to fill them. Mm-hmm. So your first cabinet is a reflection of your supporters, the people you'd work with. But as they kind of cycle through and go, you know what, I've had enough of government life, you start have to find people to fill these jobs. It's not easy, especially with the dynamic of the Senate, Republican-controlled state Senate, where they have rejected 22 executive branch appointees since Evers took office in 2019. They rejected four the previous four decades. There are concerns about, can the governor get people through? That's why the DNR secretary's job is still open. It's been open for quite a while. I don't think it's be filled anytime soon because they are worried. How do you find somebody who will get, do what you want him or her to do, but also clear the state Senate where Republicans will be like, we don't like what you're doing in the Department of Natural Resources. With corrections, the challenges are things like Lincoln Hills. There is a push from Republicans saying, why isn't it closing faster? Administration saying, well, we can't just close it. Those kids have to go somewhere. The Type 1 facility in Milwaukee is not open yet. We've got these smaller facilities that have to open as well. We want to fund the one in Madison. You guys didn't approve that last time. We need money for this. So there are always moving pieces there. There's the Green Bay Correctional Institute. Just last week, the governor sent a letter back to the Village of Alloway officials saying, look, I'm not looking to close Green Bay in a silo. We have to look at big picture with like Lincoln Hills, and it closes for kids. We can repurpose that for a mean security adult prison. We can do A, B, and C. I'm not going to just close Green Bay and
without a plan B. Right?
Yeah, and put a half billion to $1 billion in a new prison. Not going to do that. Also, he defended what's going on there, saying, hey, we're getting better at Green Bay. There's more staff coming in. It's helping. He rejects the notion that is a safety concern, that they've done upgrades that help. But still, you know, those are just a few of the challenges that he has waiting for him as a new secretary of DOC.
Right. And it's a very challenging job to work in corrections. You're not usually, there's typically not always problems, but, you know, even looking at other states, too, it's a tough position. So at least it's now filled. All right. Now we're going to get to recapping the Republican State Convention. JR, you and I were both there. A lot of headlines that we want to get to. We're going to talk about two right now, is which party leaders encourage their base to unify on the issue of abortion. Of course, we know this is a big issue that a lot of Republicans and sources are telling me that we still think this is might be a problem this upcoming election. The main message who drove that was U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. We also heard from Chairman Brian Schimming. I asked him, hey, you know, with the possibility of absentee ballot drop boxes being legal in the state, possibly by August, maybe November, with the liberal Supreme Court indicating they'll likely overturn that. He said, hey, I mean, anything that we can embrace that we think Democrats are going to take advantage, he said, I would also like to take advantage in my party. So let's just first hear from Senator Ron Johnson talking about unity. And we're also going to hear from U.S. Senate candidate Eric Hovde, who officially secured the party's nomination on Saturday. Let's take a listen.
If we're going to win, we must unify. Now, again, we'll be divided on issues. I mean, there's going to be infighting. We're human beings. It always happens. What I'm asking everybody, if you're involved in some of the squabbles, and there's a lot of little brush fires occurring throughout counties, I get it. I'm asking you, please set that aside. This is a fight for freedom. This isn't somebody else's fight. This is our fight. And it is a fight that we absolutely must win.
To the old guard, welcome the new guard. They bring new energy, new ideas. We need them to refresh our party. And to the new guard, be respectful of the old guard. They have worked tirelessly for this party, not only for years, but for decades. We all need to come together because we have to save this great country.
So you heard the comments right there from Senator Ron Johnson, which was kind of a new message that we've heard from him about unifying on the issue of abortion. He was even talking about, we all know everyone has different opinions about this. I mean, of course, across party lines, but this is something that we got to come together on because it was a problem for us in the midterms, and a lot of Republicans are a little nervous about what it can do when it comes to turnout in a battleground state.
His comments mirrored what Donald Trump said when he was in Wisconsin last time. Basically, what Trump said was, you have to do what's right, but you also have to win. And if we don't win, bad things will happen. So they're trying to say, look, you need to put your feelings aside about these things and get on board because, yeah, you may want to have an abortion ban with no exceptions, but it doesn't play well with voters. We need to think about, like, what plays well with the voters and be there, even though a ban after 12 or 14 weeks is offensive to many people in the Republican base. So that's a problem for them. The second thing I noticed was the call to unity was Huffy's comments about the old guard versus new guard. What's happening is there's been an influx of people in the party through Donald Trump. The party has changed. I talked to a delegate or an activist this past weekend who said they had never been to a convention. They recognized so few people. I mean, I've covered these things for years. Mm-hmm. I can see the same 30 people every single convention. They come every time. For both parties, they come every single
sure.
time. There are fewer, though, of those people coming, and there's this kind of like conflict. Because the old guard, people have been there for a long time, feel like this new guard haven't earned their stripes. They've only been there for 5 or 6 years. This new guard is trying to tell you guys, you've lost it. We need to go this direction. This is kind of like conflict. So Huffy was saying, you know, new guard, respect these guys. They've been there for a long time. Old guard, embrace their energy. And that played out in the National Committee Woman and Committee Man races. So these are spots in the National Committee. Every state gets 3. The chair is one of them. Then there's a male and female elected. In the National Committee Woman race, Mary Pratt Kruger had been in that position for 4 or 5 years. She's the old guard. She's been an activist for 2 decades, around for a long time. Pam Travis, who won, was an aide to Ron Johnson in 2022, also in the false electors in 2020. She's part of that kind of newer influx of people. Same with the Dane County vice chair who ran. She's part of that kind of Trump group coming into the party. In the National Committee Man race, Brad Courtney, former state chair, big booster of Scott Walker, had Walker's endorsement, had all the kind of establishment types behind him, lost to Terry Dietrich, the Waukesha County chair. Dietrich wanted to be that Turning Point USA Trump type candidate. Turning Point is this pro-Trump group. It's opening offices in Wisconsin, trying to build its own infrastructure to turn people out. They want to take the party in a more Trump direction. And the big thing I've been watching for with all this is what's going to happen in the future. Yes, Trump's on the ballot this fall. He will either be gone after this fall or 4 years from now, one of the two. After Trump is gone, unless he can somehow suspend the Constitution and run for a third term, you know, like all those things. But once Trump is gone, where's the party going to go? There's only one Donald Trump. There are lots of people who want to be Trump-ish when they run for office, embrace Trump philosophies. Nobody else has the Trump combination. Where's that party going to go? Is it going to go back toward the Paul Ryan model or continue on this Trump path? What the party is facing a split at some point, and what's going to happen with that? That's really what I'm watching down the line.
Right, and right now, I mean, the fact is this is Donald Trump's Republican Party. He made it ever since 2016 and it hasn't changed since, and that's really what's going to be the whole focus of the Republican National Convention come July when, 50,000+ people are going to be there at this convention. Also, just want to quickly mention, too, that RNC delegates were selected this week who will be there. Just a few notable ones. Former Governor Tommy Thompson, former Governor candidate Tim Michaels, and Scott Walker. Of course, there's a whole list that you can check online of everyone else who was selected. But that will do it for another busy week in state politics. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.